An interview with Robert Snyder, assistant vice provost for research administration. On September 27th, 1988. Bob, you have the questions there. Let's go through those just as quickly as possible.
All right. My name is Bob Snyder. My department is chemistry. My rank in chemistry is associate professor, and at the moment I hold two administrative appointments, one associate vice provost for research, and a second acting vice provost for computing and communication. I came to Stony Brook in, well, came to Oyster Bay, more correctly, in 1960, when I was 27 years old. I came immediately from the Brookhaven National Laboratories, where I had done a postdoctoral research associate stint for 2 years. The people who were primarily responsible for my coming to Stony Brook were Francis Bonner, most particularly. Francis, after he joined the faculty at Oyster Bay, continued to do research at Brookhaven, where I met him. And it was in discussions with him that he described for me this most fascinating venture that was going on in Oyster Bay.
Francis was chairman of the Department of Chemistry?
Francis was chairman of the Department of Chemistry at that time, yes. He described for me an institution that he had every conviction would grow into a major research university. And interviewed me at Brookhaven. Secondarily, Dr. Joseph Silverman, who was similarly a chemistry faculty member.
Wait a minute. Yes, it's going.
Okay. Similarly, a faculty member at Oyster Bay and was conducting research at Brookhaven, spent quite a bit of time with me at Brookhaven talking about the Oyster Bay campus and the potential that he saw for its future. They arranged for me to come to Oyster Bay to be interviewed for a position, which interview I remember with great fondness. The chief executive officer was Leonard Olson. Leonard asked me if I minded if, instead of sitting in his office, we walked around the campus a bit, and I agreed with pleasure, and we did so. And he asked me a whole series of questions as we walked around the most beautiful grounds in Oyster Bay. I remember in particular passing by a stained glass window behind which the university choir was practicing, and I wondered if perhaps this institution was not someplace quite close to heaven at the time. The reasons I elected to come to Stony Brook after having been offered the position were that I saw in it the potential for growth into a major research university. I had struggled as a finishing graduate student with two extreme alternative career directions, one to go to a primarily teaching institution, in particular Swarthmore, at which I'd been offered a position, another to go into industry at General Electric to do work in industrial research. On the advice of one of my close friends and mentors at Columbia, where I had been before Brookhaven, I went to Brookhaven instead, basically to find out whether I could stand the absence from a teaching environment. I had been heavily involved in teaching through my entire graduate career at Columbia, and his suggestion at that time was that I go to a place which did research in a moderately academic environment, such as Brookhaven, to find out whether it was full-time research I wanted or whether I wanted, in addition, to have some responsibility for teaching. The fact is, most important in my decision were the prospect of the growth of the campus from its size at that time. I believe I was the 21st or 22nd faculty member to join the faculty at the time. The prospect of building a university was one that seemed extremely interesting and attractive. My understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook were to meet a regional educational, public educational need in Long Island. The Heald report, I believe, had already been issued, suggesting that what was necessary were in the state a series of four or perhaps more university centers, state supported, to meet an increasing need for public higher education. It was my understanding from the beginning, from Francis Bonner, that many individuals at Oyster Bay had joined the institution precisely because of its potential for growth into a university with graduate programs, research, and a rather full range of offerings. The impressions of Oyster Bay when I first came were that it was a marvelously close organization. I detected two major camps, so to speak, of individuals, those who had either come from or had been involved in, as students or faculty, a school or schools like Chicago College, who, it is my belief, had come to Oyster Bay in the expectation that they would have the opportunity to build a small public model institution based on Chicago College. And then a second group of individuals who perhaps joined it a little bit later, who came with the expectation that the university, that the college would grow into a full university center. I note that my impressions were that this division was not across, it transcended disciplinary lines. There were people in the sciences who I believe had joined the institution in the expectation that it would remain a small liberal arts type institution, and there were people in the arts and humanities who did so, and there were similarly people in arts, humanities, social behavioral sciences, and the sciences, and later engineering, who came in the expectation that the institution would develop into a research university. My own reason for having joined the institution was the expectation that it would grow into some measure of a research institution. And those were my expectations. My expectations have worked out. I believe we have achieved a position of national prominence as a moderately comprehensive research university, full with a university with a hospital and a medical school, which I was not aware of at that time, and I think were the result of a later recommendation by a second commission.
The Muir Commission.
The Muir Commission. I welcomed the medical school, but did not know about it when I originally joined the institution, so I wasn't sure that it was going to be fully comprehensive. There was talk at that time of a number of professional schools. Engineering began fairly early, in the first few years of Oyster Bay. The medical programs did not come until considerably later. The question is whether my activities were confined to the Stony Brook campus. Yes, they were largely. I was a junior faculty member, and while I was close and friendly with a number of my senior colleagues who were involved in dealings with Albany, dealings with even the local administration, my activities were confined to the campus. I was not involved, as was the tradition, I guess, in the science department as a young faculty member in very many off-campus activities. The sense was very much that young faculty should be spending their time on their instructional and research duties, something that I welcomed. I had many friends in the local campus administration who exchanged with me information about some of what was going on at the central level and with the central office in Albany, with the governor's office, but this was for me primarily secondhand information. You asked earlier about my understandings of John Lee and his coming to Oyster Bay and his short duration there. It's my sense that he was brought in, although I do not remember precisely the mode of his selection, but after the tumultuous time with Alan Austell and Len Olson, which seemed very much to be a culmination of it seemed to be the result of the expectations of the two camps of faculty I described earlier. I believe that conflict arose because of a group of faculty who had come early on in the expectation that we would be a small liberal arts college. There was a group of faculty who felt that it was going to grow into a university. As I said, they were cross-disciplinary boundaries, to the best of my knowledge, but I believe, was the nature of the conflict that resulted in Alan Austell's leaving and Leonard Olson's subsequently being replaced by someone whose objective was presumably the mission to begin to make Oyster Bay into what would be a campus at Stony Brook and a research campus, and that was John Lee, for whom I had great admiration. My impression is that John Lee was very close to the individuals in Albany who subscribed to the development of the campus. Money was flowing in those early days, and with John Lee's arrival, it seemed like resources began to flow to the campus and were being invested in ways that shored up the growth of the campus towards a research activity.
Lee, I think, became close to Rockefeller in some way. I don't know what his relation was to Rockefeller, but subsequently he went to the
Rockefeller Foundation.
Yes.
Right. Yes, Lee apparently had close connections with Rockefeller, and of course other people had other close connections in Albany, and I guess were able to implement Lee's removal on the grounds that he perhaps was moving too rapidly, or perhaps was moving in a direction that they thought might still be reversible. I think that certainly many of us, myself included, hoped that the situation was not reversible and that the various mandates that Lee believed he had been given were truly mandates to have the institution grow. I regretted John Lee's leaving. I regretted even more the terrible fractionation that episode caused on the campus. It interfered with all of our daily functions, and friendships were broken, perhaps for very sound philosophical reasons, but the campus certainly was in a second stage of turmoil. The first having been associated with the departure of Austell and involving a student response and faculty response. Again, I guess that being a symbolism of the end of a closeness and small institution environment, and then the second one, the firing of Lee, in perhaps the hopes that there would be a reversal. Nevertheless, I was among those people who had believed that the institution would grow and was prepared to do my part to see it grow in whatever ways were necessary, including the participation in planning buildings and things of that type. Let's see.
Subsequently, I asked you how you came to your present position.
All right. I served as a faculty member in chemistry from 1960 to 1972. I had some very marvelous graduate students. I'm proud of the fact that the first doctoral degree granted by Stony Brook was to a student who I had the opportunity to advise in research. And I believe the third student who got it, his PhD, also was in that category. About 1960, Now, by 1972, the area in which I had been involved in research seemed not to be as productive for me as it had been earlier, and I began to question my own longer-range ambitions. It was at that time that I, while I was off giving a seminar on my research, ironically, I had received a phone call, which when I finally returned it, asked me whether I was interested in taking on an administrative responsibility at the university. I believed in the beginning that that administrative responsibility would be limited and part-time. It was quite apparent after a short time that that job was going to be full-time and more. As a result, my expectation of continuing some research involvement after I accepted the position of associate dean for research under, at that time, Dean Herbert Weisinger, I elected to phase out my research program and remain actively involved in teaching, which I did actually for, I recall now, the next 12 years. I continued a full involvement in teaching while having administrative responsibility in the research area. So I guess I backed into an administrative career at a time when I had some second thoughts about my own scientific career and where it might go, and welcomed the opportunity to work particularly in research, for which I had a great love and continue to have such a great love, and ended up with some responsibility in the research area that I have to this day, although it has undergone several different titles since I originally took the job.
Well, you've done a great job, Bob. It's a feeling that the research area is in good hands.
I thank you. I hope it is. I've tried to keep a faculty perspective, even though I haven't been a faculty member now for some time in a truly active sense.
Well, I remember the committee, which I guess is still going, on research in human subjects.
Yes.
That was under your wing.
And it still is, yes. Yes, indeed. It still is providing, I think, an exceptionally useful campus service, both to the campus researchers and to those individuals who have now benefit of participating in some of the very exciting research that we do here. It's a complicated balance of ethical concerns and advancing mankind in one way or another.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry that I didn't get the first part initially going. This is, now it's going all right. So we've got a good section here.